With TikTok ads, our revenue went up $10 million year over year during back-to-school season. Penn Foster is online education. TikTok is great because the reach is incredible for finding a lot of different types of audiences on the platform. Creator content at scale allowed us to easily develop and distribute creator-led ads. Our return on ad spend for TikTok is 21% higher than the next best channel.
Start growing your business today. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Formation in the Apple Cup takes a knee. The clock will do the rest.
Welcome back to another live edition of the Couch GM podcast brought to you by CougFan.com. We got a jam-packed episode today. We're doing the Pac-12 expansion draft. We have to do it this week because at any point in time, maybe over this weekend, we're going to be hearing who the expansion universities might be joining the Pac-12. So if you're watching live on the stream, make sure to share your thoughts and comments on who you think the Pac-12 should be adding. If you're watching this or listening to this on the playback, do the same as well. We're going to do a little randomizer to get this started off here. But first off, as a reminder, this podcast is brought to you by CougFan.com. Check out CougFan, subscribe to their premium membership for all things Cougar Athletics. And if you or someone you know is thinking of buying, selling, or refinancing on the West Coast, reach out to myself. If you need solar, hit up Dylan in the Twitter DMs. We'd be happy to help you out. And this podcast is also sponsored by Black Label Supplements. Make sure to check out Black Label Supplements. Use code COUCHGM for 15% off your order. So let's get into a little randomizer here. I tried to find the quick. Yeah.
Well, let's explain. So we're doing two rounds. So it'll be a snake. Everyone gets two picks, you know, and then we'll go from there. Trying to, I guess, sort of mimic Canzano's report, potentially, that there's two, that, you know, we were debating numbers between 2 through 4. We thought 2 was appropriate with the schools being discussed. So there will be, it's going to be a short draft. But, you know, we're gonna get into some of the schools that it could be. Sorry, Connor, to cut you off there.
No, you're good. And I forgot to mention, we are also having Mark Garland on at the at about 9:30 to talk about the College World Series. He's an Oregon State writer and college baseball writer. So let's go ahead and do a screen share here, and we'll get the race underway. I did the quickest version so that we could just get it done with. So it might go very quickly, but here we go. Mm. It's the 100-yard rush.
Oh, let's go. Oh, wow.
Connor. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
It's boat racing.
Okay.
honestly. Not rigged.
So technically, it's myself and then Jackson and then Dylan on that.
So lead off and then Dylan on the turn.
Sweet.
Okay. I can live there.
Let's do it. Let me reshuffle these. So I used a little technology to help me with my picks, to go through all of the different details with figuring out why a university should be added. I broke it up into 4 different boxes. There's revenue potential, there's athletic competitiveness, there's academic profile, and then there's the geographic footprint. And so based on all of that, like I mentioned in our group chat, this is a school that I wasn't really thinking as the number one option. Maybe I had some recency bias with another university that I was favoring. But it's actually Tulane was the number one pick that I selected. And so basically Tulane is a private research university in New Orleans. They have rivalries with Auburn, LSU, Ole Miss, Southern Miss. They've been in the AAC since 2014. They've been in bowl games 2018 through 2020, 2022 through 2024. 2023, they had 2 NFL picks. 2024, they had another 2. 2025, they had another 2 NFL picks as well. And kind of walking through the details of Tulane, they are a top-tier academic school, and that's one of the reasons for this is their academic prestige. They're an AAU-level private institution with a $2.1 billion endowment. They're very sound financially from the looks of it. talking about the geographic, they're in New Orleans, which adds kind of to the SEC footprint. They're SEC adjacent. So that kind of expands out. A downside is the same thing to where you're having to travel out there. And then athletics, their football team has been solid the past few years. They had a Cotton Bowl. I believe it was a win a couple years ago. They've got significant donor support. What was that?
Yeah, they beat USC in that game. That was a New Year's Six Bowl.
That's right. So, yeah. My first pick, Tulane.
Sending shockwaves through the draft room. If I'm being, I did not expect Tulane to be going first off the board. Wow. So that sets things up interestingly for me, because I feel like, Connor, I feel like technology might have led you astray here. I think the number one choice is obvious to me. It's UNLV. Give me UNL. Give me them Rebels.
That was my first before I went through this.
Right. And I think it's for me. It's simple for me. And I've said it a million times on this podcast, Las Vegas. It's in Las Vegas. I think the geographic footprint is really the start and the end of the conversation. There's a city, there's a good economic base behind the city. It is a growing media market. It has all the things for a smaller college to grow. Like, and I think that's kind of, when you're trying to choose these expansion schools, you're trying to project which schools have the best potential for growth. And to me, UNLV sits clearly above the rest and fitting with the West Coast, the West Coast footprint for the conference. You get to keep everyone on the West Coast. That's huge for me. Thank you, Connor. I will go with UNLV, and my draft board is looking good.
Just to explain why I did not go with UNLV, it's because of their financial situation and also the recency bias. Like, we saw UNLV, their football program, they beat us this past year, and it's been good the past couple of years. They've been in 7 bowl games since 1968 as a football program. So, football has not been their strength up to this point.
I agree with that.
They're most known for basketball.
I'm trying to look less backwards and try and look more forwards of what UNLV is trying to be. The money, that's always concerning. But again, Las Vegas, I think they'll find it. I think someone, they're going to find a donor base. I don't know who it's going to be, but I just feel confident that in Las Vegas, you're going to find the money. And if there are people there that want to take UNLV to the next level, it will happen. Things you're not trying to look at the next 5 years, trying to look at the next 10, next 20 years, So I think that's where my head was at. And I think that's what makes UNLV my number one. But Dylan, I'm curious where your head is at. I think Connor took more of a balanced approach, looking at sort of all four quadrants, athletics, academics, location. I was a little bit more geography. Where is your head at with the draft and what schools you're looking at? I have a good idea. We know where you're going with this one, but I want to know at least where your head is at, going into this thing.
I'm surprised they fell to me here at 3. I'm obviously going to be going with Memphis. You take a look at what they've done basketball wise for 30 to 40 years. They're a premier basketball program. Obviously, basketball is not paying the bills. It's football. They're still a premier football program in terms of G5. And what I'm looking at is, okay, you have 8 teams right now in the Pac-12. You kind of had a shoulder in Utah State because they said, hey, we'll pay our way out. Okay, come on in. So I want to bring in the best. And this conference is supposed to be technically the best of the rest. You add Memphis, you give yourself a clear-cut 5th best power conference in college football. And in basketball, all of a sudden, analytics said the future Pac-12 was around 5th in terms of conference strength this year. You add Memphis, all of a sudden, you're right neck and neck with the ACC in terms of basketball power. So I like that. I think what they have in terms of Penny Hardaway there at the program too for basketball, you come in, you've got games against San Diego State, Gonzaga, Colorado State. You know, that would be my plan.
Okay. And you're on the turn here now. So you have to consider two schools. You have Memphis plus one here.
Okay. We are on the turn, but Mark did just join us. I think this is the perfect time to pause the draft and then go into the second round. Are you guys okay with that?
Yeah. Sounds good to me. We can go ahead and
let's go.
Let's bring in Mark here. Mark, how's it going? Hey. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Here live at the Chuck, man. It's popping already. It's the first game, and folks are showing up ready to go. Can't wait.
Yeah, Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. You know, Oregon State, it's just been a fantastic run for them this year. Obviously, they go with the independent schedule. They bet on themselves. That independent schedule allowed them to host a super regional. You think that's probably the edge in taking game three against Florida State. Talk to us about just that journey this year with the team and the school deciding, hey, we're going to bet on ourselves going independent.
It was really tough. I mean, it's a tough call, right? There wasn't a whole lot of time between making that decision and trying to build a schedule because, you know, you only have about 4 months at that point to say, hey, we got to find a schedule. We got to find enough teams. We got to find enough people to play. It had to be road games. People were not going to come up here on their off weeks in the Big Ten. No SEC teams were going to travel up to the Northwest. I mean, ACC teams weren't going to travel. So you knew it had to be Big 12, Big Ten centered. They did a really good job of trying to build the best that they could. I was concerned that the committee may look at it and say, hey, this isn't a strong enough schedule. We're not going to boost you up enough. RPI numbers show that the road games performed, and the committee rewarded them by saying, being a road warrior team, playing only 19 home games, we're going to give you the opportunity to host.
I just posted the College World Series odds here right now. Arkansas, obviously, and LSU at the top of the heap, and then you've got Coastal Carolina, Oregon State, UCLA, Arizona, Louisville, and Murray State. Shout out to Murray State and them, especially with the facilities that they're playing on. Take a look at the scoreboard, some of the field. Hopefully they get some updates. But taking a look at that, who outside of LSU and Arkansas State, I guess, is your dark horse to win the College World Series?
Man, I think a lot of folks are putting a lot of faith in Coastal. Now, they probably have the best weekend rotation. They got three guys that started 46 games for them, so those guys got a lot of innings. Those guys have a huge strikeout-to-walk ratio. Between those three starting pitchers, their strikeout-to-walk ratio is almost 5-1. At the college level, that's almost unheard of, and these guys have been really, really good this season. They're right around 3-2.5 ERA. They're very competitive, and these guys want to go out there and throw complete games, and their coach gives them the opportunity. Chenal gives them the chance. I'd say if you're looking for a bet that's outside of those two teams, Coastal's a good bet. A lot of people are loving the Racers, though, Murray State, man. I mean, they have technically the best offense left in this tournament. 308 hitting. They have 75 home runs. They have seven guys that hit over 300. They just keep competing. I don't think that they have the pitching to win this thing in this format, but I love the fact that the Racers are here, and they're going to hit the ball.
Hey, plus 3,500. Oh, sorry. Sorry, Connor. Plus 3,500.
Good money.
Throw $10, you might walk away with $350.
Absolutely. And if you've seen any of our conferences or talks with Coach, I mean, Skirka, he loves his guys. He loves being here. And this is a very senior-laden team, so you're looking at a bunch of guys that have a lot of experience. I don't know. Wilder things have happened. Coastal Carolina won this in 16. Fresno State won it in 08, just saying.
Yep.
Now, talking about some names in specific, we've seen college names come out of the draft the past few years. Paul Skeens, Dylan Cruz, Jack Caglione, Travis Bazana is going to be making the jump soon here. Who are some big names that are going to be playing in this World Series that you'd be on the lookout for?
Oh, I mean, number one's Ivar Arquette. He's going to be the top taken position player in the draft this year. He's got all the pieces. He's 6'5". He plays shortstop. He's smooth. He hits. I know that the ball-to-bat contact was really worried. They were worried about that beginning of the year. Those worries have gone away, the way he's hit the ball this year and how he's done. He's corrected a little bit of the minor things in his swing. He's going to be a top five draft pick, I believe. And
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
You look at some arms. I mean, you got Cade Anderson, who's going to be a top five pick. He's sitting right here. Anthony Ianson, he's going to be a first rounder. He's sitting out here for LSU. You got all sorts of dudes that are going to be for Arkansas. It's a really heavy draft for college guys that are coming out right here versus the arms. You're going to see a lot of college arms coming in this draft, and I think that Cade Anderson is going to surprise a lot of people. And we got to see Jamie Arnold last week. There's a reason why he's going to be a top five pick. He's that good. And we saw Liam Doyle last week as well. I mean, these are guys that got their teams there because of the talent that they have. You're going to see some of those here this weekend.
Mark, you are in Corvallis, correct?
I live in Bend, so I live central Oregon, about 2.5 hours.
But for the game. So full disclosure, I am not much of a college baseball fan, but my connection point this week has been with the dam of beer cans that was built behind the everyone's seen that sort of taken off in social media. I'm curious, has that sort of ignited something within sort of like local Oregon State? Like it sort of like caught a fever for the stadium. Is it a little bit more juiced in particular, or is that kind of a standard setting for Oregon State baseball with what we sort of saw, that little snapshot?
It adds to the lore, right? I mean, it's just another thing. The beer can dam was awesome.
Yeah.
I will tell you right now that I have a source that says that there are going to be four Beavers sitting behind home plate tonight. And I don't know whether that means they're going to try to build the beer wall, but I do know for a fact that some folks donated and built those seats. So we're going to see some folks sitting right there in that front row. Wouldn't surprise me if they're building up a dam. It's a little bit further away from there. There's actually a front row of seats that's in front for special execs only. But right behind that is that front row. I think it's going to be cool.
Story to follow.
Keep an eye out for it. But I think you're going to see a ton of Beaver fans in the stands tonight. I'm going to go throughout the stands all night and kind of do interviews with folks and be enjoying the game. But the Beaver fans travel, right? And it's just a crazy stadium at Goss. And Link Jarrett spoke on it today. He was like, hey, that's a crazy atmosphere. He's like, we play a lot of good ACC ball clubs and a lot of cool stadiums. There's nothing like that that's that passionate and knowledgeable fans.
Mark, I've got two more questions for you before we get you out of here. First question, yeah. Dax Whitney today on the mound in the Super Regionals, 10 Ks and 4 2/3. This is a guy that was playing baseball in Northern Idaho, struck out like 75% of his batters. I mean, almost a cheat code for where he is regional wise playing his baseball. What has it meant to Oregon State for him, you know, bypassing the draft, showing up to OSU? And he kind of talked about it in his press conference, like, hey, this is what I laid out and this is what my plan was. And it's somewhat coming into fruition.
Yeah, I think that they did a good job of putting him on the Saturday starts this year. And it's hard for a freshman to go in and play at a big school like Oregon State right away and be in the weekend rotation. But he throws four pitches for strikes, guys. I mean, he throws four pitches. He throws fastball, slider, changeup, and curveball, the big, slow curveball. He's got all major league stuff. I mean, you're looking at a guy who's probably going to be the 1-1 in the 27 draft. That's how good he is. So giving him the ball today and saying go out there and get us a big win, freshman, not a big thing. I think that Oregon State fans trust him now. Got to see him develop this year. He just got a little bit better. Road games were tough for him. He was a 6 ERA on the road. This one's kind of a neutral side. I don't think this one necessarily cares because this one's going to be tough for everybody here. But I think Dax is going to come out and really try to shut down this Louisville lineup.
Last one I have for you. Obviously, one more year until the Pac-12 becomes whole again. And three of the schools that were added, Colorado State, Utah State, Boise State, they don't have baseball programs. What do you think the plan is in how the conference is going to look as a whole baseball wise? And is Oregon State concerned about it at all?
I know that they're still talking about adding more teams, right? I mean, if you add a Texas State, you add a Memphis, you add a Tulane and Texas State are really good baseball schools. So I think that would help on the baseball side. It's, you know, a little bit less on the football and other sports sides. But as far as Oregon State's concerned, looking at what they did this year and saying, hey, we won an independent. They let us play. We got a host. We got a super regional. I don't think they're necessarily as concerned about the all conference. They're going to go out and find other opponents. I'd be more worried about the other conference teams going out and be able to find more opponents that they're going to be able to play on the weekends. But Oregon State's going to be just fine, I believe.
Mark Garland, I appreciate it. He's live out here in Omaha. Mark, thank you so much for your time. And where can we find your work?
College Baseball Central. And then also on Twitter, I got the at Margar0010. I'll be here live a whole week.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mark. Appreciate it. Enjoy yourself out there in Omaha.
Thanks, fellas. Have a good day.
Thank you. There you have it.
There you have it.
I forgot they were in Omaha. I still thought they were in Corvallis. That's my bad. Hand up there. Whoops.
All good. And you know, one thing I wanted to play was a quick little snippet from Dax Whitney at his press conference. This is a true freshman who's sitting 96, 97 miles an hour. And as Mark said, a guy that might be the number one pick in the 2027 MLB.
Noah Bink of 11.7. This question's for Dax. In Coach Canham's opening statement, he didn't mention you by name, but you are one of those guys who did pass up on the draft not just 11 months ago, and now you're playing in Omaha. Describe the feeling stepping out onto the field today.
I mean, I kind of had this. This was my vision when I made that decision to come here. I really wanted to come here the whole time. It was more of like a, if I get lucky, I'll go to the draft. I wasn't planning on it. I was really set on coming here, and this is like, this is exactly what I dreamed of. This is why I came here, because I knew we were capable of it, and I knew we're capable of going further than we are right now. So that's exactly why I came here.
It's just awesome. I mean, you know, especially over the last two or three years, guys, like we've kind of bonded and formed this. It's not even a stepbrother relationship. We're blood brothers. Oregon State, Washington State. I'm living vicariously through Oregon State baseball. It's like that one Office episode where Michael and Dwight, they go up to the regional sales meeting, and Jim is, you know, up in Philadelphia at the time, season two. And it's like Jim and his new boss have an inside joke, and Mike's like, oh, that's cool. I'd love to be a part of one day. I would love to be a part of a super regional one day, let alone getting to Omaha. I don't know if that's going to happen in the near future.
Might have to just be living vicariously through our beeves on that one for a little while. Hopefully we get that thing figured out on WSU's end.
And the last thing I'll leave it before we jump back into our expansion draft, three former Pac-12 schools, or I should say two and one current. You have Arizona and UCLA in there, as well as Oregon State. It just goes to show you what happened was absolutely horrific to the Pac-12. And I'm going to end there, because I'm going to go down a rabbit hole, but let's jump back into the draft.
All right, Dylan, you're back on the clock.
I'm back on the clock.
Seamless. And look at that, guys. That's professional podcasting right there.
It's like draft, we've done before.
This interview, and then back to the draft. No notes from me, guys. This is great. All right, continue, Dylan.
This one's tough. There's a couple schools that I'm looking at in terms of, okay, do I want to go basketball only here? I'm not. I'm going to go all sports. And this is something that if I would have said this maybe 3 or 4 months ago, I would have been laughing at myself, but I'm going to go Texas State here.
I don't think I'd make that at all.
The reason for that is a lot of similarities to what you were saying about UNLV going into the future. I think Texas State is investing in their athletics. It gets you into Texas. Now it's just a pinky finger getting into Texas with Texas State. I'm not saying, hey, we're coming into Texas. Recruiting is going to change drastically, but it should getting into Texas. Mark brought up a good point. You get baseball with them, you get all sports, but the one aspect that is a little bit tough is the basketball team is putrid. They're going to really bring down analytics in terms of the strength overall of the conference basketball wise. But I'm looking at something as I'm betting on a school 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line that might get bigger. And they're showing that they invest in their programs. So I think you can also get Texas State in terms of only accumulating maybe 75% of the media deal. So that's where you can hopefully maybe get creative, where you bring in Texas State in 3/4 of getting media dollars, and maybe you push that towards Memphis. That savings you made with Texas State, you push to Memphis for travel.
Yeah, I will, and I guess we'll find out, but I don't think there's probably going to be a lot of appetite for many of these schools coming in to be on any sort of like three quarter or like a partial share. I don't know that. That's just kind of like a guess. Like, would they? I mean, they're so coming from the Sun Belt, and yeah, I don't know what the payouts are, what that looks like, what would make financial sense for them. But I agree with you. The Texas schools have warmed up to me quite a bit, and just because that state takes sports really fucking seriously. Like, that's all that I know about them. I don't know about San Marcos. San Marcos is not a media metropolis. Like, I just am hoping that someone out there, and this is always the case in Texas, in the middle of nowhere, someone has ungodly amounts of money that they're willing to spend on sports. And I'm hoping that that's Texas State to some degree, or could be that in the future. I don't know. But obviously, I am at five now. And you would think that maybe UTSA could be off the board next. Certainly a bigger media market in San Antonio. I don't know about you guys, and I realize now that we're one of the only two former Pac-12 schools, I feel a connection to San Antonio. I have been there multiple times. I've covered an Alamo bowl out there. It just feels like a city in Texas that for some reason I'm familiar with and I'm kind of partial to. However, I'm not going to San Antonio.
Bit of a surprise.
I'm going to the Bay Area. I want basketball only. Give me St. Mary's.
Ooh.
I want St. Mary's. I think that that's just a perfect, you kind of keep them out of the football money pot, and we start adding up units. Get these guys into the, get them into the tourney. And I think that, Bay Area adjacent, I believe is a fair characterization of where they are located. Yeah, I couldn't point that out on a map, but I know it's somewhere in the Bay Area. Great basketball program. And it just feels like a good fit for having the two, Gonzaga and St. Mary's, as the basketball only. You get 8 in football. You have 10 for basketball and other sports. I don't know exactly how that works out. St. Mary's, any good at baseball? I don't know, but maybe could be something there.
They are. They actually upset Oregon State in the regional, the first game, and Oregon State had to rattle off, I believe, 5 straight wins to get out of the regional. So
the one other point, a little sprinkle. Yeah.
I want to make on St. Mary's too. I'm looking at it. Okay. Like, this is a 5-year deal. It's going to 2031. That's where they signed their grant of rights. I'm looking at Randy Bennett. He's probably in his early 60s. I'll double check the age, but as long as Randy Bennett is coaching that program, I've got full trust in him making the tournament at least 3-4 out of 5 times in that 5-year stretch. And if they just make the tournament, let's just say they make the tournament 3 times out of that 5-year stretch. Well, that's $6 million in units just by making the tournament without winning a game.
Right. And I by no means think St. Mary's is in Gonzaga territory, but I do think if Bennett were to retire, I don't think the program just collapses. I think they have sort of some institutional success within them, like they know how to be a good basketball. Yeah. Yeah. Some institutional stability. So I think they're a great fit. And because we're only doing the two,
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
In my head, this feels like get the two that make the most sense geographically and that fit within the conference. And then, like you said, after 2030, where you might see more shakeup, then you can start adding some different schools. But for the record, I had St. Mary's in my power rankings, which I did rank 13 schools for this thing. I had them above both Texas State and UTSA. I think Texas State and UTSA are great schools and could be great additions. I just think St. Mary's could be more valuable to the Pac, to the new Pac-12.
So and Jackson, with, going with regionality, I like that.
UNLV like that. And St. Mary's, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled. I got my 1 and 4 in my rankings at with the second overall selection. I'm feeling pretty good about that.
With my final pick, my first pick, Tulane, New Orleans, expanding the geographic range a little bit. Since you didn't take UTSA, that's the one that I'm going to go with. It's San Antonio. Okay. It gets you into Texas, the recruiting there. They've had a solid football program. They won the Conference USA championship 2 years in a row in 2021 and 22. They've been in bowls since 2016, 2020 through 2024. They have rivals with Texas State and North Texas. They play in a very large stadium, 65,000 capacity stadium. It's typically knocked down to 36,000, I guess, for their home games. But get you into Texas, and that's, you know, Texas State, UTSA, either one of those, I think, would be a good ad just for the Texas part of it.
Okay. The other aspect too is Texas State is a 45-minute drive from Austin, so like. And I believe it's in the middle of Austin and San Antonio, you know, so it's about an hour from San Antonio. So both of these schools kind of get into those media markets. And what's better than telling some Cougs, hey, let's fly out and get out to Austin, spend a couple nights there, then watch a game in San Marcos.
Yeah. Hey, I mean,
as well as San Antonio.
Yeah. Could be for sure. Cougs get creative wherever they may be. Okay. We've reached the end of the draft, but I want to challenge you guys. We have gotten pretty much the obvious schools, the schools that people have been talking about. Who are our outside looking in? And maybe it's just one. Maybe it's just a couple. We can maybe groupthink this if we don't want to do it individually. But who are your guys's just once you get past our, you know, Texas State, UTSA, St. Mary's, who's next? If it got to that situation, which we can acknowledge would probably not be a very good situation, but if it got there, who are you looking at as the outside looking in right now?
I'm curious your guys' thoughts. I did use a little help to kind of determine this, but previous we were going to pick a couple of basketball only schools. You mentioned one, the three that ChatGPT came up with was St. Mary's, Creighton, and VCU.
I don't think Creighton would jump at that at all. I think they're probably pretty content in the Big East. You said VCU?
Yeah.
What conference are they in? Is that?
They're in the Atlantic 10 with like Dayton, St. Bonaventure, as Adrian Wojnarowski is now their GM
right.
there.
Okay. Yeah.
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 Jackson GM
okay.
at Sacramento State. You know, it's like, when's Clay going to be GM?
Interesting shout from AI. Interesting shout. So my other two call basketball only schools were University of San Francisco. And then this one was a much sexier school probably 2 or 3 years ago and has trended in not a great direction, but I'm not ready to pull the plug on them quite yet. And that's Grand Canyon University, GCU, in Phoenix. It's a weird school with how it's like a publicly traded university, essentially. Very bizarre. I don't really know a whole lot about that. And that's probably why I'm not making the decision, because I know nothing about that. But getting back into Phoenix for the Pac-12 would also be huge. And they pop up here and there, their basketball program, they do some things. So I think, again, trying to look at a school where you could project growth, it's a brand new university. And it's trying something that's at least innovative in a pretty much uncharted territory for college sports. Who knows? I mean, for God's sakes, we're looking at private equity for college sports. Why not be a publicly traded university, you know?
A couple comments that I'll add from a couple universities that makes a ton of sense. Alexis says Cal and Stanford.
Okay. Not yet. That does not make sense yet. But
not yet.
In the future.
I just don't see Cal and Stanford signing up to be in the same conference as Boise State from an academic standpoint. I think Calford would go independent before they join the Pac-12 again. That might be a hot take, but that's my opinion.
And if that's what they want to do, that is their prerogative. But like Cal and Stanford as independents, like, yeah, go for it. You know, like, I think there's a little bit of difference. You know, I think those schools financially sit above the rest of the Pac-12. And that's, sorry, I don't want that. Like, what I like about the Pac-12 is you have all of these like-minded schools that are sort of sitting on an equal playing field. You know, obviously everyone, anyone in college football is looking for an opportunity to move up the pecking order. But realistically, everyone that's sort of situated in the Pac-12, it's like, this is kind of the best option available. So let's invest our resources into this thing and like build something that we can actually grow with instead of, you know, everyone's going to be looking at 2030. Hey, what's our opportunities to move up? You know, I really actually do hope that we can just continue and build the Pac-12 and not participate in whatever that may look like. I don't know if it actually will materialize, but people say it will. So I kind of hope that this thing will stay together. But if we're doing a all sports school, I think now once you get past Texas State, UTSA, we're not considering the basketball onlys. That's when you start trying to make some more calls back over to the Mountain West and see what a Nevada is up to. I had Nevada as the last of, you know, I guess seven, right, in my power rankings with all those, the first six being taken between us.
And there is some precedence with Nevada football. It's been a while, but, you know, the days of Chris Ault, when he coached at Nevada, they were a fantastic program. You had Colin Kaepernick there. They, you know, they beat Boise State that one year. Their kicker misses a field goal where there was a thought that Boise State could maybe make the BCS national championship. Yeah. You know, basketball wise, they have just put a ton of money into a new arena. You know, Reno's a cool little spot. My mom lives in Sparks, Nevada. You know, it's kind of, you know, what do they say about Reno? What's the tagline?
Oh God. Oh man. I know it's the biggest funny though. It's like,
yeah, the biggest like little city. Yeah, something along the lines. You can gamble. You got Lake Tahoe, 45 minutes. You know, there are some attractions from just maybe being a fan and visiting. Steve Alford, you know, obviously coaching their basketball program. And, you know, some thought too that if you were going to get UNLV, it would be a tandem just because the Nevada Board of Regents handle both of those schools. So I don't think that's a bad idea. I would not be mad if we got a combination of Nevada and UNLV, but I don't see that.
Let me pose another question to you. If this was the option, you're getting a package of two schools. You're either getting UTSA and Texas State or you're getting UNLV and Nevada. Who would you go with?
Nevada and UNLV. Easy.
Easy. Okay.
Easy. Yeah. Not even a question for me.
Connor, you?
Yeah.
Not as easy. It seems that sigh tells me a little.
It's definitely tough. And like the whole research part of it, like with the UNLV financials that's going on there has definitely skewed my thoughts in the past, in the recent few days. I definitely wanted UNLV. So I think UNLV in Nevada would be great. But then also getting into Texas with those two universities, they're not big name universities in Texas, but they would help with the recruiting and getting out more and more of a national stage. That's tough. I'll say, UNLV in Nevada as well. Keep it more regional. Okay.
And then I wanted to make my, you know, you said, okay, hey, let's get a third one in just in case. I'm going to go a little bit out of left field here and I'm going to stay in Texas. I'm going to go with North Texas and the Mean Green.
Okay.
And you know, one of the reasons too is, it's a growing university. Over 40,000 students. The Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex is, you know, obviously rapidly growing, and it's also an R1 research university. So you kind of get the academic side of things as well. Our former offensive coordinator at WSU, the man who brought us Cam Ward, Eric Morris, coaches there. You know, he's had a couple good seasons, 6-7 wins in his first couple years there. So That would be my choice. Obviously, they just lost their basketball coach. They hired the Cleveland State coach to come in there. But North Texas, they've made a couple tournaments in the last 6 or 7 years. They're always probably that second best team in terms of the AAC when you're looking basketball-wise. Who's next to Memphis? That's all Memphis has in terms of a quad two opponent, maybe quad one on the road when it comes to basketball in the AAC. Other than that, it's slim pickings.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I just saw one of the comments, North Texas and Rice as a package, which is just hilarious. I mean, is that, that's the ploy to get Cal and Stanford back, would be to add North Texas and Rice. There we go. Getting some of the R1 universities.
Okay, let me pose this hypothetical to you, Jackson. If they added North Texas and Rice, and Calford's like, hey, ACC breaks up, and they decide that they want to go back to the Pac-12, you get no other ads, no UNLV, no Memphis, no Tulane. But if you get North Texas and Rice, and that gives you Calford, are you taking it? I think that's easy.
So in this hypothetical that it's a guarantee that we're getting Cal and Stanford, that is a lot more appetizing. But the reality of the question you were posing would be adding North Texas and Rice now, waiting 5 years, and then once the grant of rights is up for the ACC, potentially then we could add Cal and Stanford. And who knows whether that would be, you know, the risk of that and potential blowing up in our faces, or the Pac-12's face, is significant, I would say. So hesitant to say yes to the actual reality of the question you just posed, but if it is a guarantee that Rice and North Texas gets me Cal and Stanford back, yeah, I'd consider that one. But again, I'm just so soured by Cal and Stanford. Like, screw you guys. Okay, go. You know, you guys want to go hang out with other R1 universities? Like, then go across to the ACC and do it. If you don't like what's going on the West Coast, then sorry, get out. You know, that's kind of where I'm at with them at this point. The idea of being with other schools who look at you are just like gross. Like, I don't want them in my conference. It was one thing when we were in the old Pac-12 where we were sort of always the underdog and we were sort of, in a sense, we're happy to be here, but if we're now inviting them back and they're like, ew, gross, WSU and Oregon State, like, no, get out. This is our conference now, and we're recreating in our own name, image, and likeness.
The other university that was recommended, and this is actually in the top six. Now, this is not realistic at the moment for the same reasons, because it's in the ACC currently, but SMU is another one. What are your thoughts on SMU eventually?
Yeah. Again, they just seem like their pockets are so deep that they'll figure something out. That's
They'll buy their way in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's
what they did.
That's kind of the program.
That's what they did.
Well, that's what they did with the ACC. And then like, okay, if that falls apart, then we just try the Big 12. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know what'll happen.
Remember originally the plan was with when it was just UCLA and USC leaving. And the hope was that, you know, Washington and Oregon were going to carry the flag for this conference going forward. The ads were going to be SMU and SDSU. I mean, if you take a look at that conference, yeah, you lose UCLA and USC, but really, what has UCLA ever done in college football? What have they done? They have done nothing over the last 30 years.
I was going to say, when you start looking 10, 20 years, like in terms of the teams that departed, of realistic universities to potentially come back, is like, does UCLA, like, I don't, it just feels like UCLA is just hemorrhaging money in all of these endeavors in the Big Ten. And it's like, does it get to a point where they're just like, guys, this just isn't us. Like, we're losing money every year doing this. We're not being competitive. Maybe we just do come back to the Pac-12. It makes more sense for us. But that's like something that's a 10, 20 year conversation, I think, not an immediate conversation. So if I'm looking at all those schools, I think potentially, you know, UCLA could be the one that wants to get back in the mix, opposed to the rest of them.
And yeah, the money financials have always been something that is a dark spot with UCLA, but looking at their NIL expenditures this season so far, basketball, they bring in Donovan Dent from New Mexico. He's probably getting upwards of $1.5 million. And then you bring in Nico, I cannot enunciate his last name, the transfer quarterback from Tennessee.
I don't know. That was my
I am a lava. So obviously
probably not it.
You know, and them in Penn State, there was an article that they dipped into private equity, and that I guess that will be our transition into the right. Boise State Jeremiah Dickey AD comments last week. And Martin German, the UCLA AD, and then the Penn State AD, they came out quickly and said, no, this isn't a private equity right. deal. We're having them work with our ticketing and possibly looking into future endeavors. But that brings us up to what Jeremiah Dickey said. This was an article from Front Office Sports. Exclusive, Boise State is actively considering bringing in private equity investment into its athletics department. Broncos AD Jeremiah Dickey tells Front Office Sports. Dickey expects to have a deal in place within the next 6 months. Another crazy tidbit in this article, if you go on to read, private equity investment could be available at the conference level in the future too, Dickey says, that he expects there to be new opportunities through the Pac-12. Thoughts?
Yeah, I thought, well, my thought was that Tim really nailed it on the head in your guys' conversation with him. At the university level, what exactly are you collateralizing? Like, what's being put up? That's a very scary thought of what you're putting on the line right there. The conference level makes a lot more sense. But even then, I'm like, where are we projecting the growth and like money to be able to actually like make this make sense? Like, are we projecting quick growth that is expected from private equity? Like, they are, you know, trying to get a return on their investment and fairly quickly, you know, do we see the trajectory of the Pac-12, the new Pac-12 growing like that? These things, for me, it feels like for me, the new Pac-12 has always been a long-term project. That does not make sense for private equity, in my opinion. Like, I don't see the return coming potentially, you know, maybe it's the second media rights deal that you're seeing, you know, growth. And that's what you always hope that, you know, the next media rights deal is going to be more than the last one. But man, like, that just seems like it's going to be problems. But
yeah,
I don't know.
As you described, private equity is not a not-for-profit. They're not just trying to give money and get the same amount right. back. They're trying to make profit 10% on their money that they're putting into it. So that means ticket prices, everything is going up because they're trying to increase revenue any way that they can to get additional revenue to get additional profit. And so at the university level, that's very scary because that means that all of the university's assets could become collateralized to where now this private equity firm that may be a publicly traded company on the stock market now owns all of your assets. And what if they decide like, hey, this university isn't really panning out. You know, we're not making profit here. Let's just shut it down. Let's just sell all of the assets off and move on to the next one. I mean, that's the long-term potentially where that could go.
Yeah. And the thing is with the new Pac-12 and what I hope for it is that it can really try and marry what we love about old college football, sort of the regionality of it, proximity of rivalries, and sort of the new of we're paying athletes now, NIL, all of that, and try and do it in a way that works for all of these universities. And private equity just feels like the opposite of what would work for these smaller universities. Private equity feels like it would work for bigger, like, I know, like, Texas and Ohio State and these schools, like,
because those are professional.
They're not short for cash, but like, they could support, I think, private equity money and feel comfortable that they can get a return, that, you know, there will be a return on the investment for the PE firm. I just don't feel that the Pac-12 can say this. Any school or the conference can feel the same about that.
Mark has a comment here. Yep. But what about the PR hit to a private equity firm if they shut down an athletic program?
When has they really care about publicity? Yeah, I was.
They're caring about profit. That's all that matters.
When has a private equity firm ever cared about bad PR? I don't think that's sort of in their business model to care about those kinds of things. But yeah, I mean, that's, again, that is the ruthlessness of that world, which is why you don't want to get involved in that world. The money is nice, but you could potentially be making a deal with the devil.
And just to do a quick plug, if you haven't seen it yet, make sure to check out our full episode with Tim Brandl from the Cougar Collective talking about the changes with House versus NCAA, everything that will be affected, and how the Cougar Collective is changing their strategy moving forward with this. We saw Montlake Futures, the University of Washington Collective, has now shut down because of this. Cougar Collective is not going to be shutting down. They're just going to be able to work more directly with the university on everything.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the things that I would have loved to have, you know, and Tim only has so much perspective on this, I think, but he was sort of laughing at the idea that they were shutting down Montlake Futures. I guess what I really
sounds like pay
to
for
know,
play.
Well, hey, I don't know. I don't know what he knows, what, you know, what his thought behind that was. But the question I have is, because, you know, as much as I don't like University of Washington, I don't believe the people running the school are a bunch of idiots. Like, I think they saw something that was like, this is a smart decision for us, you know, but WSU looked at the same situation, said, no, this is not a good, you know, we want to keep the Cougar Collective. Why? I just want to know what are the different factors for, is it smaller universities like WSU, maybe geographically a little bit more complex, you know, kind of out there, not in big media markets? Does it make more sense for those schools to keep their collectives and for the bigger sort of media market schools to not? I'm just trying to understand what's the difference and why one school would say, we don't need this, and another school. And quite frankly, like nationally, what, because I'm only familiar with what's going on in Washington. Like, does Ohio State, are they keeping their collective? You know, all the big name schools, what are they doing? And then what are all the small schools doing? Haven't really been that tapped into it, but that's something that I'm really curious to kind of watch going forward.
And Connor, I believe the deadline for figuring out what the salary cap in terms of revenue sharing is going to be, I believe that is coming up soon. I think it's in the middle of the month. So that's going to be pretty interesting to see. Also, John Canzano earlier this week came out and said that the expectation, along with John Wilner, is that the media deal is going to be anywhere from $7 to $10 million for the Pac-12. What are our thoughts on that? And is there any chance that maybe this thing pushing up to 12, because I think 7 would be not great. And I think a lot of people would be very disappointed with that. I think 10 is probably the bare minimum of how low you want to be.
Right. I think that was, and so unfortunately this margin, because I feel like last year when we were talking about this, the projection was about 8 to 15, pretty wide gap. And everyone immediately, their head goes to the last number, 15, rather than 8. But I just feel like the $7 to $10 million annual payouts for schools was probably always the more accurate. You know, I don't think 15, I don't know what schools would have had to have been involved for that to ever been a possibility. I don't know what the circumstance, maybe it's not even the schools. Like, I don't know what the circumstances would have had to have been. But that just felt kind of, based on who the peers are, what group of five schools are getting paid for their, you know, in their media rights deals, 15 million was steep. And I do think that broadcasters do look at the new Pac-12 as a group of five conference, you know, regardless of whether we're on the masthead of all the house settlements as a Power Five conference. Which is great. And I think it still should be used as an argument for as long as we possibly can to claim some sort of autonomy. I don't know how that all works, but I'm not frustrated with, you know, 7-8, not like it just is what it is. You know, you want it, you just want the figure to be as high as it can possibly be just to sort of feel good about it. But, you know, it is what it is. And you just got to hope that you continually get it to an increase every, you know, every decade or however long the media rights deal ends up being.
Yeah, I don't necessarily have like an opinion on the set dollar amount and what to expect. It sounds like we should have word very soon on what that actually will look like. So we'll be able to talk more in detail on what the full details of that look like and how it impacts each university.
I do have one more thought. I do think optically it is better to go from $8 million annually on that first deal to then 12 or 15 to show growth rather than that first one being 12 or even 15, and then the broadcasters realizing they're paying too much, and then the next year is it's a 12 or 15. I just think as a conference, you want to be showing growth. That's really important. And if you go two media rights deals, your first media rights deal, not getting growth on the second one, that for a lot of people is scary, not demonstrating growth in your media property.
Well said. I agree with that.
Well, yeah, I think that'll do it for this episode, unless you guys have anything else. But
nope,
thanks everyone. Thanks everyone for tuning in. So I guess just to go through our picks real quick, I had Tulane and UTSA. Jackson?
UNLV and St. Mary's, feeling great with the draft.
Memphis and Texas State.
So let us know your thoughts in the comments below. Who took this one? Let us know your thoughts on who the Pac-12 should add. We'll have news very, very shortly on when the news actually comes out. But thanks for tuning in. Make sure to check out next live stream next Thursday, 9 o'clock in the morning. And until next time, go Cougs.
Option. Pitch. Didn't get it. They stopped him.
Formation in the